Hello and welcome to our podcast with Nourishing Insights. This is our first podcast and I'm very excited that we are joined today by Christine Bashara, who is joining us from her home in Manhattan in New York. And we're very excited because today we're going to be talking about a paper that Christine has been involved with, which is looking at issues around gut bacteria and the role that they may play in prevention of the recent COVID infection. So we're going to talk about that in a minute. But first of all, I'm just going to say welcome, Christine. And we're going to talk a little bit about, give your bio, and then get you to join in with a little bit of background. So first of all, Christine is an MD and is the founder of From Within Medical, which is a medical wellness practice that places a real emphasis on the mind, body and gut brain axis to prevent and manage disease. So those of you who know me can see why already we're connected. So with over 20 years of clinical experience, time and time again, Dr. Bashara has discovered that the connection between these systems plays a significant role in disease prevention and management. But it's something that's not adequately been addressed. Dr. Bashara is board certified in internal medicine by the National Board of Physicians and Surgeons and is certified in integrative medical weight loss by the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine. She has previously served as assistant professor and clinical preceptor at New York Medical College, and her professional experience has spanned academically and clinically in both inpatient and outpatient settings. Christine is also a busy mum of three, and so she very much understands the impact of daily stresses on modern living and on her health. Consequently, her therapies involve very much a multidimensional and customised approach based on many factors, and she focuses a lot on the immune system, as you'll see very shortly as we begin our discussions. She's also into the role of aesthetics and has just started looking at non-invasive techniques for personalised skin rejuvenation. So that is a little bit of background. So Christine, thanks very much for joining us. And it's just so exciting to have you and to be discussing this topic. And those who know me, you know I'm so excited about gut health. I'm always talking about gut health. So tell us, how did you get into wellness medicine?
Well, thank you so much for inviting me to join you in your first podcast. And I'm so delighted that we're able to join forces and to connect, even though we're on different continents, but we have a lot in common. And so, like you said, I've been a practicing internist for over 20 years. And what I've seen is that the patients that I've had over the years have many chronic illnesses, which we've been treating. However, as much as we been taught to treat with medications and hospitalizations, we really haven't guided patients in preventive medicine as much as I'd like to. And so that's been a passion of mine. And it's something that I really focused on because I saw so many conditions that were preventable. And with the right lifestyle changes, with the right tools, with the right guidance, it's definitely doable. And so my passion was to really just try to help as many as I can, because I think feeling great then kind of expresses itself externally, and then you want to look great, and it's just something that I think everyone wants. So this is really my passion. My personal journey as well, I was obese as a teenager, and I struggled with my weight in my early 20s, but I found the right formula for me. And again, it's so much related to personalized care as well, because we're all different. We all have different hormonal changes. We all have different metabolisms. And so my goal is to help everyone find that personalized guidance that they need to help them achieve their best health.
Mm. Okay, thank you. And it's interesting because I think a lot of people who get into wellness medicine or lifestyle medicine or functional medicine are very much people like yourself who've had that personal journey, that personal experience, but who also have a real passion in wanting to help people and to help get to the root of their problems. And very often the root is in fact lifestyle medicine and nothing more than that. It's these lifestyle factors of food, stress, sleep, inactivity. It's the same things that come up again and again and again, but it's helping people to navigate that and also having an evidence-based approach to be able to do that. And that's what these functional approaches give us.
Absolutely. And I'm a big believer in once you're empowered with the knowledge and tools, then you will take control of your own health. Your doctor's not going to be able to help you. No one's going to be able to help you until you're empowered and given that knowledge. And I think we all want to be in control of our own health. But unfortunately, so many of us don't have that right guidance or the knowledge. And so that's where I really want to just help people to learn, to understand how your body works, how your immune system works, how your gut is so linked to your mind, your body. It's a very intricate system. And our bodies are designed for survival. And with the proper care and lifestyle changes, we're all able to change our health.
Absolutely. So we're doing a bit of a reverse interview, aren't we? Because Christine's going to play this podcast at home to her followers as well. So I think I'm handing over to you now to take the hot seat for the interviewer.
Sure. Well, so what we wanted to discuss, and this is something that I've really been passionate about, but what we found recently, and I think it's very pertinent that we're talking today because of what's going on in the world with the COVID-19 infections that we've seen. Unfortunately, New York City has been the epicenter of this pandemic. And we've seen so many cases of patients who are getting ill. Of course, we know that the elderly are very vulnerable, those with comorbid conditions. But what we've also seen is that the majority of non-elderly patients that are getting hospitalized are patients who are either obese, diabetic, or insulin resistance. And this is definitely not a coincidence. And so my colleagues and I decided to do a little bit more research to find out what may be driving this increased susceptibility to infection. And we first looked into, it was like a light bulb moment. My husband is an ICU physician, and we would, in the beginning when it was really busy and he was treating so many patients, and of course, you know, this is a infection that many of us are kind of learning for the first time, but he and I discussed the role of cytokine storm and the role of interleukins and how they're driving the severity of these infections. And so what I found, and that, again, like I said, it was my light bulb moment where I said, you know what, we need to find out why are these specific subsets of people getting sicker than others. And it kind of went back to children, and children are not really getting sick, right? We're not seeing as many children. I mean, I know there's a small set of children who are getting a little bit sicker where they're having that inflammatory syndrome. We can talk a little bit more about that. But overall, in general, children are not getting as sick as adults are. And so we decided to do a little bit of research on why that might be. And, you know, as someone who's a proponent of gut health, that's where I started to do my research. And what we found was very interesting. We found overall children's guts are much healthier than adults. But why are they much healthier? We found that their gut distribution of gut bacteria is very different from adults. And in particular, one specific gut bacteria called Bifidobacterium, which has been known to play a role in immune modulation and immunoprotection. And that specific bacteria is higher in children. And as we age, the levels start to decline. And interestingly enough, the majority of children have Bifidobacteria occupies the majority of their gut. About 60 to 70% on average. Again, you know, these numbers can change based on many factors, but that's what we found on average. And we found that as people age, it drops down to the point where some elderly patients have less than 1%. Ironically, we also found in our study that certain centenarians in Italy and Japan were found to have higher levels of bifidobacterium than those in the elderly population that are younger than them. And so there's definitely a link, we believe. Again, this is a hypothesis that we found much research on, and we would need to do clinical trials. But what we found is that bifidobacterium definitely modulates the immune response. It coordinates the decrease of pro-inflammatory markers and the increase of anti-inflammatory markers. And we can discuss that a little bit further as well. I can go into it now if you'd like, or if you want to ask some more questions, just bring it up.
Yeah, no, I think that it's good. You've set the scene there really, really well. And I think that, you know, globally, we're getting to understand these issues, the fact that it is the older people and it is these people with metabolic conditions, people who are overweight, who are more susceptible to this virus. But again, even in the UK, pressure has been put on the government by a number of medical professionals here. One in particular I can think of, Asim Malhotra, who's a cardiologist in London. He's certainly been shouting off the rooftops about this problem and saying that we really need to be targeting the underlying challenges, which is the obesity epidemic.
Absolutely.
And get into grips with that, because it's these challenges, it's these inflammatory conditions which are making these people fall prey unwittingly to this horrible virus. But there's always going to be another virus and another virus. So surely, shouldn't we be tackling these underlying challenges? Because these are the things that is making these people vulnerable to this nasty attack from a virus that really their immune system should be able to tackle quite well. You know, the immune system is pretty clever, pretty impressive set of unique systems. Checks and balances are in place to be able to cope with anything that life throws our way, but we need to make that as robust as possible. So, you know, it's fantastic that you're looking at this and that you're covering all of these challenges in this paper, because it's not just about what we eat, it's about the impact of what we eat has on our gut health, on our microbiome. And that's possibly why children have a much better microbiome, because they just haven't been around long enough to do the damage yet. They just haven't been around long enough. They're generally fairly active, they're on the go, and that's good for the microbiome. They're eating, you know, a reasonable amount of food until they reach older age and they become stressed, which damages the microbiome, and then they're in the vicious circle of carb craving and all those things that are imbalancing and not good for the microbiome. So they just haven't reached that point yet in their history. And so, you know, maybe that has a lot to do with why their gut's much better. But also, you know, if we want to continue into longevity, it's so interesting what you said about these older people, mm-hmm. centenarians who are, you know, reaching old age with a much more robust microbiome. And I think that's really exciting and really encouraging and really motivating, I think, for people that, you know, a lot of people say, oh, well, the damage is already done. You know, there's no point. It's all in the genes. What will happen will happen. But actually, you know, from an epigenetic point of view, we can influence these changes and improve our health if we start thinking about our microbiome. So,
I agree with you. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm thinking about my next question on my list of things, because I have a few things that I want to discuss with you. So first of all, I want to think a little bit about why it is that people with these chronic inflammatory issues are actually struggling with COVID. So we just go a little bit more into that.
Sure. So I think many people have heard that term, she has or he has inflammation, or they're inflamed, right? And it was kind of this just general term that we've used. And a lot of people probably don't even understand what that means exactly, but what we have found is that people actually are inflamed, this specific subset of people. And what happens is that the way I see it, it's like a traffic light. So normal individuals who are not obese or, you know, are fairly healthy, they're at green. And an obese individual or someone with diabetes or insulin resistance is at yellow. And the reason why they're at yellow is because they have higher levels than normal of a specific pro-inflammatory cytokine called interleukin-6. Mm-hmm. And interleukin-6 is one of those things where it's great in small doses. And, you know, there's not, we don't know everything about it yet, but what we've seen is that interleukin-6 is a pro-inflammatory marker. And so what it is it's something that's released as a result of some kind of injury to the body, infection, intruder. And so it's basically there to help us, to protect us. Unfortunately, in this specific subset of people that I spoke about have higher than level subclinical levels of interleukin-6 already circulating in their body. So mm-hmm. they're at yellow already, and this is where we see that term inflamed. Mm-hmm. It's because their body, for whatever reason, and it's probably due to the fact that they don't have as healthy of a gut microbiome, they have other conditions that are causing their body to react. And so those levels of interleukin-6 are higher than normal individuals. And so what we've seen is when these patients have been infected with COVID-19, what happens is their body is on already kind of hyper alert. They're at yellow, right? And so you get this intruder, and so they stimulate this hyper exaggerated response to the intruder in a way to kind of fight for their body. But this hyper-exaggerated response initiates something called a cytokine storm. And unfortunately, the cytokine storm, even though it's meant to help the body, it's actually causing more damage because then you're having an influx of all these anti-inflammatory markers, and you're trying to migrate antibodies and white blood cells and all these natural killer cells that are really trying their best to attack the virus. But unfortunately, you know, they're also damaging tissue. And this is exactly what we're seeing. And interestingly enough, in the ICU, they have been giving medications which are interleukin-6 inhibitors. Mm-hmm. And those have been successful in kind of diminishing the response. And so this is really where we find that link. These people do have a higher the normal level of interleukin-6, which is what's causing that pro-inflammation. Yeah. And it's present in adipose tissue. And believe it or not, this is something that's reversible, because we have found that with administration, there were some studies done a few years back, administration of this bifidobacterium that we've written the article about, specifically bifidobacterium breve, which is one of the more common types of bifidobacterium in children's guts, in infants' guts, actually. And even more abundant in breastfed infants. We found that patients, we had one study where they were given to obese individuals and their BMI decreased after 8 to 12 weeks of administration. We had another bifidobacterium species called Bifidobacterium infantis, which also was found to decrease pro-inflammatory cytokines such as interleukin-6. And that's actually also been one where they get to premature infants who have necrotizing enterocolitis. And it's been found to be helpful. So we have all this evidence of our gut playing such a major role. And it's definitely something reversible, because we've seen with diet, with weight loss, these levels have gone down. So I'm really excited about the findings that we have. And I'm hoping that we can start some form of clinical trials as soon as possible, where we're checking patients' guts. We're correlating the results with who's high risk, who's being treated, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's all very exciting. And I love your analogy there of the traffic lights, because a lot of people don't understand what we mean by this idea of inflammation. And this expression, the cytokine storm, people have no idea what that means. It's just a phrase that's been bandied around in the media. We just know it's something nasty and it has something to do with the virus. Mm-hmm. And if you have it, you're in big trouble. But what's interesting in these high-risk groups is that in their situation regarding their immune system, it would seem that their immune system, I liken it to being otherwise engaged, otherwise busy. So if your immune system's already busy tackling inflammation, which comes from and along with these other inflammatory conditions like heart disease, diabetes, obesity, etc., then, you know, it's understandable how and why it would have difficulty coping with yet another immune threat, which is from a virus. Because what we don't realize is that the immune system is involved when we have any of these inflammatory conditions. These are chronic immune-mediated conditions, and that's the part that the public wouldn't understand. They wouldn't understand that their diabetes had anything to do with their immune health or their gut health, that there would be these connections there. And that's where the kind of work that we do in this sort of wellness and functional approach, then we're looking at these, the interconnectedness of these disease pathways. And it's these chronic inflammatory pathways that obviously are very much driven by the presence of or not these bacteria. So yeah, I really, really like that approach, and fantastic that there's a possibility there of clinical trials following on from this review paper as well.
I'm hoping that we build some traction and do get interest in this so that we can see if there's a correlation. Unfortunately, and I don't know how it is in the UK, but unfortunately in the US, wellness medicine is not really covered by insurance. So many people are not able to have proper wellness exams and get access to all these measures that we think are so vital. And so the way I see it is, a small investment in your health eventually will lead to, I guess, a bigger payback when you're older, right, to prevent illness. And that to me is something that also I'd like to really focus on is why isn't wellness covered by insurance? I mean, maybe this is somewhere where we now have the opportunity to actually show that the immune system is so linked and what we eat really, really does affect our health. I am not sure how it is in the UK. Is it similar?
I mean, obviously, it's very different here because we have a free system of the NHS. But, you know, the NHS system is basically run by primary care GPs at the bottom end who are seeing people face to face and running those very short 10-minute or slightly more, if you're lucky, conversations. But there isn't the time, there isn't the funding, there isn't the training to support people with some of these chronic conditions in the way that they should be, because basically when you've only got a few minutes to see someone, it's very much a case of, well, here's the pill. There's no time to actually look at the underlying challenges, but that's where people like us nutritional therapists come in, because that's what we do. And interestingly, within the UK, there are a growing number of doctors who are studying the functional medicine approach and are studying nutritional therapy. So, you know, year on year, those numbers are going up. And in the UK, we've also got a great GP who's a real ambassador for this, who's called Rangan Chatterjee. And he has had a TV program actually talking about this lifestyle medicine and showing how we need to be bringing this approach into mainstream. But it's, I mean, I'm sure there are those doctors out there who, bless them, are trying to do this and trying to introduce it in their own quiet way. But the system at the top isn't allowing space for that and allowing proper funding for that. So in some ways, you know, we'd be pretty similar in the way that people operate in this country. And that's why there is a frustration among people with these conditions and they're looking for answers elsewhere. Hence they come to people like us, of course, because they want to get to the root of the problem. They don't want to just throw a pill at it. They want to find out, well, what can I do and what's not working? What am I doing wrong? Why am I still overweight? Or why have I still got high blood pressure? What can I do differently that will influence that? So that's really, what we're about and where we come in, fortunately. And again, it's crazy because it's very costly. You know, whether it's NHS or whether it's, you know, private funding or whatever it is, doesn't matter. At the end of the day, somebody somewhere has to pay for this crazy approach, and so it has to change. We have to have, you know, medicine is going through a bit of an evolution now and is changing, and it has to, because this is it's a common sense, intelligent approach. And if you think about the situation we're in just now, it's all the more ridiculous, because here we are facing this immune threat, and yet the immune system is never thought about or discussed among, you know, those government leaders. It's almost as if we don't have an immune system. But of course, you know, 70-80% of our immune system is in the gut, and that's why we need to be considering our microbiome, and it's absolutely fundamental. Now, recently on that topic, actually, a couple of weeks ago, we did have a report in the national press saying that 120 or more than 120 scientists in the UK have actually put forward a proposal to the government to suggest that we do just that. We are, you know, we need to look at gut health. So obviously people behind closed doors are starting to make those connections and have those discussions. So that's a good thing. That's a positive that's coming out of this. But it's taken weeks and weeks for people to come forward, and all that, you know, the only suggestion has been stay at home, don't go anywhere, wash your hands, you know, all practical stuff, but it's not doing anything. It's not serving any purpose at all regarding the immune system. And that's, it doesn't make any sense, because we have to tackle the immune system or we're going nowhere fast.
I agree with you. I mean, I feel like this was probably a wake-up call, and we have been making progress in holistic medicine. So I'm happy about that, but we definitely need a little bit more attention to the gut, as you said, which is so linked to the immune system. And not only linked to our immune system, but linked to our mental health as well. I don't know if many people know that 90% of serotonin is made in the gut. And there's a direct feedback loop from the gut to the brain, and our neurotransmitters, you know, that affect our mood are linked. And, you know, I tell people this all the time, but I truly believe this. I think hopefully this will be the case, but I believe that gut analysis really is the routine blood work of the future. I think all of us really need to assess our guts. And so many conditions have occurred as a result of leaky gut and of just that dysbiosis that's going on for whatever reason. I mean, you know, it's funny. I tell my kids all the time, there's good and evil in the world, right? And that good always overpowers evil. Well, the same thing's going on in your gut. You know, there's bad bacteria and there's good bacteria, and you definitely want a higher ratio of that good bacteria to help with the integrity of gut health, with membrane support. I mean, this is all, you know, these are all prerequisites to the development of leaky gut, which again, I mean, you're releasing all these toxins into the body and causing inflammation. And I think this is really what's going on. And so I'm glad that we're kind of making some traction and there's some attention. I just feel like we really need to bring a lot more attention to the gut mind and the gut body.
Absolutely. And of course, and another aspect to that is the fact that stress itself suppresses the immune system. So that's another factor that is important. And we've created actually a lot of stress in the last few weeks and months because, you know, we're creating stress by A, creating this social isolation, but also a lot of the fear mongering as well around the condition itself. And a lot of the things that have been said that have been appropriate. And, you know, even around suggestions that young, fit people have got this and have died. Whereas actually we don't know the truth about those young people. We don't know anything about their immune health. We don't know their vitamin D status. We don't know what their microbiome is like. We know nothing. And we certainly don't know about their mental health or their stress, which, as we know, suppresses immunity. So there, it's all of these factors. You'd have to understand an awful lot about an individual to know whether they were high risk or not. The fact that they don't have a condition diagnosed doesn't actually tell you anything, because health is so much more than the absence of disease. And again, that's where we come in with our work, because we meet those people who don't actually have a label, don't actually have a diagnosis maybe, but or they have the wrong diagnosis, and then they appear and they're trying to get to the root of something and trying to understand, you know, again, what they could be doing wrong or what it is about their history that's brought them to that point. But people are usually very keen to find those answers and very motivated to do something about it.
I agree with you. And I'm really glad that you brought that up, because there are so many people out there that quote unquote look fit and healthy. And in essence, we don't know what's going on with their gut. I mean, I'll give you an example. There's so many people, like you said, that have vitamin D deficiency. Vitamin D plays a significant role in the gut. There are many people that are magnesium deficient. Magnesium is, you know, a mineral that is present in almost all functions of the cell. So many nutritional deficiencies that we're seeing in young people and older people that definitely affect our health. And interestingly enough, for my practice, I have incorporated something called antioxidant a scanner. And what that scanner does, it's a non-invasive scanner where you put your hands on and it actually checks the level of carotenoids in your skin to determine how high your antioxidant level is in the body. And I've checked many individuals who appear very fit and healthy, who actually have very low levels, suboptimal levels. And this is another thing where, you know, we have these people who appear healthy but are not. And like you said, there's so many different factors that go in, and we don't know whether or not these people have an adequate a gut, antioxidant levels, which might be suboptimal, that are contributing. And you know, we can speak a little bit more about that, but we need antioxidants to fight free radicals. And without that, free radicals are free to cause oxidative damage in cells. And this is a whole nother issue that we have. So I think we need to start looking at, you know, different options of how we are viewing health. It's not just from blood work and, you know, diagnosis of disease. I mean, these are all the end factors, but we need to look at the, you know, pre-factors that are causing all of this.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And actually, it's funny. I mean, a big part of my work, of course, is doing stool analysis, which is a part that always raises a laugh from people, because it's sounds like such an awful thing to have to do. But it's funny, because I'm always so excited when the results come back for anyone, because it tells you so much about what's going on. And I always think, what a huge privilege to do something like that, especially when you're young. You know, I came to all of this later on, and I wish I'd known about these things 30 years ago, because I would have solved a lot of problems with my own health with having IBS for years and years and years, and assuming I would just always have it. But, you know, it's great when you learn these things. And I always think these young people who do come along and do stool tests, they learn about their health from day one, and then they do something about that. They're able to influence changes which are going to carry them long into the future and have implications for all sorts of things in terms of disease prevention and supporting their immune system and their mental health and everything else, because they learn about these things and they learn how to manage them and how to support them. So, yeah. It's a great thing. And you know what you were saying, it's interesting about antioxidants, but I also think there's a bit of another thing going on there, because with food not being organic, most people are not buying organic, and therefore they're going to have much lower levels of antioxidants than if they were buying organic. And again, there's a bit of a public health issue there, because really all food should be organic. We shouldn't have to make that choice. It should just all be organic, because we do know there's a higher number of nutrients and a higher number of antioxidants when we do eat organic. And, you know, that comes from huge meta-analysis from Newcastle University, if you want to look up that reference. But, you know, we know that it does make a difference. And I suspect that that's why you're seeing those differences in otherwise healthy looking individuals, because the food is just not the same. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there's so many people that can't afford organic, and that I think organic should be ubiquitous.
That's all, right.
Not something that, you know, is a privilege to buy.
That's right.
And so I really hope that I'm so glad that you, as a nutritional therapist as well, is someone that can coach people and to train them and to give them that knowledge and power that they need. We need more people like you. We need more people to educate, because I do truly believe that education and knowledge is the power given to a patient to take control of their life. Mm. It's true. Like you said, organic is very important, but we have our work cut out for us. We have a lot of, work that we need to do to educate those. I mean, we don't have to buy everything organic. There are certain foods, like certain fruits and vegetables, that are the clean 15, that, you know, that's okay. And the dirty doesn't. I recommend for everyone to have to put those up, because you know, for example, like an orange, it has a thick covering. You might not necessarily need to buy that organic. But it definitely, everyone should really look up the clean 15 every year, and the dirty dozen. I think it's important to know. But I'm so glad that we were able to connect and discuss this across the pond.
Yeah, no, it's great. And actually, the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15, people always laugh about that one as well when I tell them to look that one up. They wonder who the Dirty Dozen are, but it sounds like characters in a movie. But yeah, it comes from the Environmental Working Group. If you look on the Environmental Working Group website, you will actually find not just food, but you'll find all your cosmetics, your toiletries, everything you use in your personal care products, and you'll find out which ones are the nasties and which ones are okay. So do have a look at that, really good resource.
And you have an app as well, so you can just look at it directly from your phone, the EWG.
Now, talking about going back to some of the studies that you mentioned in your review, and of course, one of the things because I do a lot of work with fertility, and I love it when couples come to me to talk about preconceptual planning, because really we think about true preventive medicine happens before we're even born. It happens getting hold of couples, talking about diet, talking about gut health, immune health, and talking about the home in which, the environment in which you're going to place that growing child in utero. So we need to get things right then. And I did notice that you had a study on the role of bifidobacteria right from pregnancy and then in the early days of infancy as well. So do you want to say a little bit about that?
Sure. It's funny because we found that certain impacts to the levels of bifidobacterium in infants are related to the mother's health, what the mother is eating. I mean, they now are focusing on, you know, in our nutritional history and physical, we're focusing on whether or not your mom, you know, ate healthy, was her diet healthy, whether or not you were breastfed, whether or not you were born vaginally or through cesarean section. There's so many different factors that are affecting a child's gut percentage. And we found that babies with, who receive breast milk, I mean, this is why they call it liquid gold, is babies who receive breast milk definitely had higher levels of bifidobacterium. And I'm not here to shame anyone or any mother that, was not able to breastfeed for whatever reason. And personally, having three children, with all three of my children, I had problems with latch on, and I was not able to actually physically breastfeed all of them, but I did pump breast milk for about 3 to 6 months for each one, just because I knew the importance. So I'm definitely not here to shame. And also, if you're listening to this and you're older and you're saying, well, I never got breastfed, it's never too late to change. It's never too late to take your diet and eat the right food and eat fruits and vegetables. I mean, the servings that they recommend, which are 3 to 5 fruits and vegetables, is too low. I mean, we definitely need to be eating at least 6 to 8 servings of fruits and vegetables daily to improve our gut integrity. Mm-hmm. So those are the things that we did find that were variables in the levels of bifidobacterium in children. And I don't know why certain children got this Kawasaki type condition that we are seeing with a very small set of children, but it would be interesting to see those children and see what factors they had that may have impacted the role of their gut.
Yeah. And I did notice one of the studies that you included in the review article was on the fact that taking probiotics during pregnancy and then the babies in the first 6 months of life would have an impact on prevention of the atopic conditions, so eczema, asthma, etc.
Yes, we've seen that as well. There was another study that we looked at where they gave bifidobacterium to children with atopy and asthma, and they did a control group where they didn't receive it, and they found that the subset that received bifidobacterium, their symptoms actually improved, their asthma symptoms. Which I don't think is a coincidence
And actually similar studies being done in the UK from the University of Swansea Medical School, where they again gave the mum's probiotic during pregnancy and then the baby's probiotic first 6 months of life, and they found a significant reduction in symptoms of eczema and also in food intolerance issues as well later on, just by doing that, which is a very simple intervention, very cheap intervention, but goodness, the cost of steroids, for example, to the NHS for kids with eczema and asthma and all these things are just growing exponentially in recent years, and have to go back to issues around our gut health, our microbiome, because you think, well, why are we seeing all those cases now that we didn't have 30-40 years ago? And now it's literally out of control, but it's unpleasant for those going through it, but it's also a huge cost to the NHS here.
I agree. I do want to stress, though, that probiotics are great, obviously, for administration, but I think more importantly is we really need to change our diet.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the bottom line.
The best probiotic comes from a prebiotic. What a prebiotic is, as you know, is what you're eating, certain specific vegetables and fruits and foods do provide that prebiotic for your gut. I don't want people to just start taking probiotics because yes, they're great, but we don't know how much of that is actually absorbed, what percentage is actually going up. I think just changing your diet and lifestyle is, I think, the priority, and also with probiotics is a secondary.
That's right. And I mean, we're the same here, and we always tell people there is no point in spending money on expensive probiotics and then feeding it all the wrong things. You have to create the environment, and actually, you know what, right now, actually, in where we are, we're just about to open garden centres, which is exciting because we can go out and get our bedding plants. But the thing is that if you're planting bedding plants and you want it all to look pretty, you start with the weeding, you start with the mulching, you start with preparing the ground. And we need to think about our guts in the same way that we...
Very good analogy.
Thinking about what we're putting in, but also thinking about the things we really don't want to be putting in or things we want to be removing. And it's taking the time out to think, well, what are the things in my life right now which are not supporting my gut health? You know, is it the diet drinks that I'm drinking every day routinely? Make that your first start. If you start simple with something like that, because again, those sweeteners are massively disrupting your microbiome and they're creating the wrong environment. So it's the sugars, it's the sweeteners, it's the processed food, all of these things that we need to be removing. And the thing is that, you know, we talk about prebiotics and we talk about probiotics, which could be fermented foods and things. But at the end of the day, if we just eat what our great grandparents ate, we wouldn't have a problem. You know, they didn't have probiotics in those days. They had real food. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have a problem. They didn't have the chronic inflammatory immune mediated conditions that we have now. So we can see how modern living has created this complete mess that we're now in. And so we need to be thinking about that and changing the choices that we make in the shopping trolley on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. And basically go into a supermarket, buy your fruit and veg, nuts and seeds, whole grains, legumes, quality meat, quality fish, lots of omega-3, and then get out. And do not buy anything else in that building unless it's toilet roll. Leave. Because everything else is bad. Everything else is bad for you. I mean, even the cereal aisle is a disgrace. It literally is a disgrace because there's only a few things there you could buy that are actually healthy. A handful of products from, you know, decent companies that are producing nice things. But otherwise, just leave. Get out of there before you reach the danger zone and pick up something that you would, you know, wish you hadn't bought. Because when we eat real food, the microbiome is taken care of anyway.
Absolutely. It's that good and evil again, right? I mean, you can't start a microbiome journey with more evil bacteria in your gut than good. It's just, it's going to attack the good and you're done. So you really have to start, like you said, from our foods. And interestingly enough that you mentioned that, you know, they've done studies on children in third world countries and in industrial nation, and we have a higher rate of inflammatory bowel disease in industrial nations. And I think it's really processed foods, but that's also right. We have such high levels of allergies, nut allergies in our children, where you're not really seeing that in a lot of third world countries. And that's because we're eating fresh, real food. I mean, they have, you know, an issue with quantity, but what they are eating, I mean, they're much healthier. I don't think they have a high nut allergy ratio in third world countries as we do in industrialized nations.
Yeah.
So definitely something to look at as well. And it's, again, it's the gut, it's the immune system.
It is. But it's also back to that hygiene hypothesis as well, of course, about us being too clean. And, you know, in these countries, they're just going to pick stuff off the ground. They're going to eat it. They're not going to wash it first. You know, we've become too clean. And actually, potentially now, we've become, ironically, even cleaner, which is not necessarily benefiting us. So there's a bit of a double-edged sword, that one, with the advice by governments to, you know, scrub everything and clean everything to within an inch of its life. And actually, I would say within clients, that's that over cleaning is creating a lot of anxiety in people.
And the overuse of antibiotics is also kind of thing. You're getting rid of all your good gut bacteria too.
That's right.
There's significant studies relating antibiotic use as well, even in infancy, in childhood. I mean, limit as much as you can antibiotic use unless absolutely necessary, because that does deplete your bacterial flora, your good flora. So we really need to just go back to the basics. And I'm so glad that we're having this conversation, because I think it's so important.
Yeah. I know. And I think as well, it's, you know, it's nice what you said before about not judging people and giving your own experience, because I think you and I are both like that as practitioners anyway, that we would be very much sharing our own observations and our own experience. And, you know, I think that with all of these things and with weight management issues as well, there are lots of things that contribute to weight management issues. And unfortunately, these aren't being addressed in mainstream, as you and I both know. The misinformation is going out. And of course, inevitably, these poor souls can't manage their weight, can't get out of that trap. But that's because they haven't dealt with all of the underlying factors, which might be emotional around cravings. Or they might be, again, infections in the gut around yeast infections that are driving them to eat more sugars. Or it might be food intolerance due to the leaky gut. And that's driving them to eat more of that food that they are intolerant to. And so then they start with weight management. And it just goes on and on and on. It's just endless. And again, with nutrient deficiencies, that creates problems, and especially those macronutrients, not enough protein, not enough good fats. You know, the low-fat movement that makes people remove good fats from the diet, and of course, then they're not promoting satiety. So then inevitably, of course, they're going to be hungry for something else. So it's, you know, we create these traps, we create these vicious cycles because we don't have enough of an understanding about how to support ourselves. And of course, by learning all these things, we don't just support our microbiome, but we also support our immune health, our blood sugar, you name it, we do it.
Mental health.
Yeah. And a lot of the things, you know, I was thinking before our conversation today about, you know, prebiotics and probiotics and thinking, I don't usually say to people what, I do mention sometimes prebiotics, but I don't go into whole lists of which foods they are, because actually if you're eating legumes and you're eating nuts and seeds and you're eating whole grains and vegetables, you're going to be hitting your prebiotics anyway. It's nothing more complex than eating real food. So we don't need to get hung up about the terms. It's just eat real food and prepare it yourself from scratch. And I think one of the biggest things we can do for our health right now is learn to prepare food, learn to cook, and just develop a few staples that are easy enough to do, and kind of go from there and really help each other with cooking.
I agree. I think we're in an advantage right now that many people are home and have access to fresh food. You know, the restaurants, many restaurants are closed and people are resorting to making their own foods. Well, this is a perfect time to start that where you're eating fresh food. But you're also, if you have children, you're teaching your children proper eating habits as well. You know, our family, for example, my children's antioxidant levels weren't as high as I thought. And they're all thin and, you know, very active and very healthy, and they all do sports. And so it was interesting to see that. And we've now been making daily smoothies where we're putting in, you know, three or four different fruits. And we sometimes will throw, usually we do throw like organic spinach leaves or celery in there. And so they're getting like four servings just in one cup of a smoothie morning, and then it kind of sets their day. And I'm happy to say that they've all increased their antioxidant levels. And it's not something that you know, even if you don't have a scanner, I mean, it, you know, if you're eating, like you said, fresh food, and you're incorporating, you know, 6 to 8 servings of fruits and vegetables daily, you're going to have that gut diversity automatically. You're healing. You're going to heal from within.
Absolutely. And I think with children as well, they like being involved in cooking and preparing food. So I think involving them is important. And my granddaughter at the moment, she's 4, and she has been planting lots of things and lots of herbs because they're easy to grow. So right now she's picking parsley from the garden and eating that direct, which my girls used to do as well when they were small. And it's so nice because, of course, that's packed with antioxidants. It's just what you need. It's ideal. Something like parsley is so nutrient dense. But encouraging children to just pick things straight from the pot, straight out of the garden, and eat it.
I agree with you. Really, I think you involve them. Yes, when you involve them, they definitely are more prone to improving their health. Again, it just goes back to education. Knowledge is power.
It does. In mind,
and they will. They, you know, people want that. They want the guidance.
That's right. So that's nice. And one final thing on gut health is that, and again, I was thinking about having this conversation with you and thinking about the tips that we'd give. But I think what I would say to people is that when you are making these changes and you read somewhere, oh, I need to eat more onions and I need to eat more garlic, it's good for my gut. And then you start eating more of those things, and what happens? You end up with tummy pains, you end up with other problems, because then there's something else going on. And sometimes people with IBS, or sometimes people with small intestinal bacterial overgrowth and these kind of things, for a while anyway, just can't tolerate some of these vegetables, or can only have them in small amounts, or can only have them cooked versus raw. And so there's all these caveats we have to think about, and that's where the work of people like us comes in, because then you can help people navigate some of the complexities out there and some of the traps. Because otherwise, what worries me is that, and I've experienced this in practice, that you meet people who say, oh, I tried that, but it didn't agree with me, so I didn't eat it anymore. And they actually end up eating a very narrow diet because they don't tolerate something. Whereas actually, if they learn about foods and learn how to navigate some of these challenges, with working like people like myself and you, then you know, we can help them on their way so that they can achieve good gut health, like those centenarians that you mentioned right in the beginning, and make those improvements over time. But just take it slow is what I'd say. You know, don't go and buy a huge jar of sauerkraut and have it half the jar eaten by the weekend, because you'd probably be doubled up with a tummy pain if you did that. So it's take it slow. Take whatever you do really slow and listen to your own body, and just gradually start to incorporate these sorts of changes.
I'm so glad you brought that up because it's true. I see so many patients with similar symptoms where they want to start eating healthy and then they go all out. And unfortunately, you know, either due to leaky gut or maybe SIBO, they're not able to tolerate these foods. And so you kind of have to, again, just start from the beginning and do an elimination and consider maybe doing a low FODMAP diet and just, and looking at the source, and they need to have their blood work checked and they need to make sure that their gut integrity is intact. And if it's not, you know, to get on the right path.
That's it. All roads lead back to individualized medicine. It's the only way to do it. And, and it's the only way to keep people on track, really, and keep them motivated and empower them to understand their own health and their own bodies and what they need to do and why when things go wrong. Well, that's okay. It only went wrong because of X, Y, Z, but it'll come right again. And that's where we can encourage people. So so that's great. So I think that we'll leave it there. But thank you for joining us today for our very first podcast, which has been just amazing to have you all the way from Manhattan. And I hope that our listeners and your listeners will enjoy this and take on board some of those tips and be encouraged by it.
I thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad we were able to have this conversation, and I hope we have more future conversations related to this and that more people hear this and are inspired to change their health. And it's doable for anyone and everyone, and it's never too late. So that's the beauty of it. And so I thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining the Nourishing Insights podcast. We do hope you've enjoyed it, and if you'd like to follow us, you will find us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. You will also find our website at nourishinginsights.com. Look forward to seeing you next time, and in the meantime, stay nourished and let food be your medicine.